This is the Daf Yomi Masechta Review, Masechta Gittin, Tape Number 3. This review is only meant for people who learn Daf Yomi on a regular basis, or those who have learned through the Masechta. It is the goal of this review to be as accurate as possible in summarizing the highlights and kli klalim of the Masechta. However, it is possible that on occasion, something will not be reflected correctly.
For subscription information, call us toll-free at 1-888-DAF-YOMI or write Daf Yomi Tapes, P.O. Box 831, Muncie, New York, 10952.
This tape is dedicated in memory of Ha'isha Yehudis Bas Avrom Kameli, Zichrono Livrocha. Our Magid Shia is Rabbi Yossi Heber.
We're holding a Masechtas Gittin, Perek HaNizakin, but before we can begin that Perek, we need to review the final Daf of the Perek before, which is on Daf Memches. Just reviewing back the Mishnah that we had on Daf Mem Zayin, the Mishnah said that if one sells his field in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim, he is required to purchase the first fruits, even at high prices, and bring them as like Bikurim. This would be Bnei Tikkun HaOlam, to discourage people from selling land of Eretz Yisrael to Goyim. This is a theme that we've had in numerous Mishnayos, that there were certain Gzeiros that were made, Mishum Tikkun HaOlam, for the betterment of the world. This was one of them. And the Gemara had said that if someone sells his field for agricultural purposes only, Rabbi Yechanan says he must bring Bikurim and read from the Parsha. Reish Lakish says he brings Bikurim, but he can't read the Parsha, since the land isn't under his total bailus. And from the Pasuk of Lakachta Vehevesa, we learn that you can only recite the Parsha of Bikurim if you both took the Bikurim and brought them to Yerushalayim. But if you did just one, then you cannot recite it. Now let's begin the final Daf Yer Daf Memches. According to Reish Lakish, the svara of not being able to say the Parsha is because we say Kinyan Peres Lav Kekinyan Haguf. But according to Rabbi Yechanan, we say yes, Kinyan Peres Kekinyan Haguf. And this machloikis is only when they began practicing Yovel for the second time after the Hefsik in the time around the second Beis HaMikdash. But in the Zman that Yovel was Chal, like in the first Beis HaMikdash, all would agree that maybe the Kare, i.e. the Parsha. If a person inherits a field, Steachu Zasai, and is Makdish it, and then Hektish sells it, so when Yovel arrives, it doesn't return to the original owner, but rather it returns to Hektish, and the Kohanim divide it. Brothers who divided land, inherited from their father, give it all back to the full pool in Yovel, and it gets re-divided. In other words, between all the brothers, it gets re-divided. Also, the Bechor will get his usual pi shnayim. Abaya says we paskin lahalacha like Reish Lakish, that we say kinyan peres lab kinyan haguf. So if a man wants to represent his wife in a din Torah of her land, even though he owns the Paris, but since he doesn't own the land, i.e. Kinyan Paris, Lavka Kinyan Haguf, he would need a Shtar Harsha, an official Shtar, making him her official agent. This marks the end of this Perek. Perek Hamishi HaNizakin, beginning here on Daf Memches. Although many of the sugis in this Perek don't really deal specifically with Gittin, but we're continuing the Inyan, of Ibn Tikkun HaOlam. We've had many of the Mishnayos until now talk about Takanas Midrabanan that were made for the betterment of the world, Ibn Tikkun HaOlam. Now we just simply continue with the Mishnayos and coming up, continuing this discussion of Ibn Tikkun HaOlam. As background to the next Mishnah, we know the general rule is that if someone damages someone else's property and he pays back for the damages, he pays be'idus. He pays with the best quality land that he owns. If a Bal Chayv is paying back a loan, he pays bebeninus, he pays with medium quality land that he owns. And if a husband is paying his wife a ksuba, that's paid with ziburius, with the lowest quality of the land that he owns. And the Mishnah says, if someone damages someone else's property, or someone else, he must pay, of course, nezik, he must pay for damages. If he doesn't have cash, he doesn't have cash money, then he's allowed to pay with land. But he can only pay back beidus, with the best quality land that he owns. A bal chayv, who owes money, he pays back with beninus, he pays back with medium quality land. And midiraisa, he really only has to pay back ziburius, with the lowest quality land. But the Chachamim made a takana for these types of things, that if a person borrows money, he doesn't pay with ziburius, with low quality land, but rather he pays with beninus. The purpose of this is so as not to discourage people from lending money, because if people would know they're only getting back crummy land, they would never lend money. However, ksubasisha, that's paid with ziburius, that's paid with low quality land. Rameir says, even a ksubasisha is paid bebeninus, just like a regular chayv. When a person borrows money, there is a lien on all of his property. So if he sells it, and then he loses all of his money, the malved can claim his money back from this lien. These nechasim, and this lien is called nechasim mishubadim. But he can only claim from these nechasim mishubadim if regular land is not available. regular land which is normally available, would be called Nechasim B'nei Charan. So you can only invoke this right if there are no Nechasim B'nei Charan. And this is true even if these B'nei Charan are only Ziburius. If they're only Ziburius, you have to take from that. You can't go to the Nechasim B'Shubarim. Also, when collecting from Yusayimim, one is only allowed to collect from Ziburius. Gemara. The Pasuk says, Meitav Sadehu, regarding when an animal is mazik something. It's a machlekes how we evaluate this best land, idus payment. Is it the best of the damager, which is Rabbi Akiva holds, bit of mazik shaminin, or do we evaluate it as in terms of what's the best of the damagee, the person who was damaged? Rabbi Shmuel holds, bit of nizik shaminin. And according to Rabbi Shmuel, we only say he must pay idus of nizik is if you don't know how the damage really was. Aye, but why don't we say Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya and let him pay just the Beinonis? Our answer is the total amount, for example, $2,000 is the same. It's just a question if you pay 20 acres of Idis worth $100 each, which totals $2,000, or 40 acres of Beinonis worth $50 each, which also totals $2,000. Daf Mem Tes. If a person donated money to Hektish, the Gizbar, the secretary of Hektish, can come to this donator and claim the payment from Idis, the best quality land. The Gemara says the first time an animal gores another animal, the owner pays chatzi nezek, only half of the nezek. This is called a tam. Later on, he'll pay nezek shalem. He'll pay the full value because he's considered a mu'ed. But if the animal gores a behema of hektish, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Minasya, you must pay nezek shalem even on the first goring. According to the Rabbanan, one is never mechuyev to pay anything if his animal gores a behema of hektish. The Gemara says the person who damages must pay idis, the best. This is because of Mipnei Tikkun Ha'olam, so that it'll discourage damagers and thieves from damaging or stealing. For they'll know, they'll lose their best fields if they damage or they steal. And a Baal Chayv is paid B'Beinonis, since if it was B'Ziburis, a person wouldn't lend money, and people need to borrow, would have a difficult time borrowing money, because no one would want to lend the money, knowing that they would only be getting the lowest quality land. Ksuba is paid B'Ziburis, since even if a woman gets divorced, she has a major desire to be married more than a man, so she'll remarry quickly on her own. Mar Zutra says that ksuba isn't paid b'ziburis, but rather it's paid b'beinonis. Background. There are two types of guarantors of a loan, an orev and a kablon. A kablon has a greater responsibility, since the malva can go directly to the kablon without having to first ask the leiva. Dafnun. If a person says that he wants to be an orev on a ksuba, everyone holds that there's no shibud because he didn't mean that he wanted the responsibility of the shibud. If one became a kablon on a chayv, everyone holds the shibud ischal. But if he accepted arvus by a bal chayv or a kablon to ksuba, it's a machlekes. The hilchasa, in all cases, whether he has or doesn't have land, the shibud ischal. But by arev to ksuba, even if he has land, the shibud is not chal, since it's a mitzvah. One always must collect money from Yusayimim with ziburis, even if the shtar specifically said he can collect from Beinonis, even if it had a tznai, since all collections from Yusayimim are b'ziburis. This is machloikis in other gemaras if shibud is a halacha midaraisa or a halacha midarabanan. Really, the gemara says, debts should be paid with ziburis, but the chachamim said it should be paid with Beinonis, so shalai sino el delas bifnei lovin, because no one would want to lend money if it was b'ziburis, as we mentioned before. This halacha that limits collection of money from Yusayimim in Ziburius is only if the Yusayimim are ketanim, but once they're Yusayimim that are gedalim, one can collect from Beinonis and could even collect from Idus. When a malva collects money, he first must go and collect from the Nechasim B'nei Charan before going to the Nechasim which are Mishubadim, i.e. land that was sold to others. The purpose of this is to protect people who bought land from someone else, because if someone could immediately jump to the Nechasim Mishubanim, the people who had bought the land are going to get messed up, because they bought it not really with the clear understanding that they would potentially lose it. If three people purchase land, the Malva must go to the last purchaser to claim the Nechasim Mishubanim before he goes to earlier purchases, since the earlier ones can say, I left over B'nei Charan for you to collect from. So it's similar to Ein and Ephraim and Nechasim Mishubanim. The Gemara says food that is scheduled from a ksuba to go to the wife and children can only come from Nechasim B'nei Charan, not from Nechasim Mishubarim, since it isn't a precise amount, and anything that's not a precise amount can only come from Nechasim B'nei Charan. Daf Nun Aleph. When a man dies, although the sons get the Yerusha, any daughter, when she marries, is entitled to 1/10 of the estate at that point in time. If a person finds a mitzia, and it appears in this case that it was a case of Maida B'miktsas, i.e. a person finds something, and then the person who lost it comes and says, You say you found only $5. I lost $10. So it seems like it's might have been mixed. And technically, we know in a case it might have been mixed, the person has to swear. We do not make the finder swear because of tikkun ha'olam. If we would make finders of lost items swear, no one would ever want to come to return lost objects because people would be afraid, but they would have to swear. And people don't like to do that. By the way, it's important to point out that if a person comes himself with the mitziyah, that it's a machlekes mishainim if he must swear, since he has a migu, that he could have kept quiet, he didn't have to say anything. According to Rabbi Yitzchak, there are cases that he would swear if it was a might of a mixas. Rabbah asked, why did the Torah say that a might of a mixas should make a shvua? Let's say that he's potter, since he could have been kaifer bakal, he didn't have to say anything. He answers, since ein adam meis panav bifnei bal chayve, a person wouldn't have the chutzpah to deny everything in front of the person who lent him the money. He might deny part of it, and he'd be a might of a mixas, and he has to swear, but he would never flat out say, I didn't borrow any money from you. Nachman Beis, the Mishnah. If an abitropis was appointed to divide land for Yusayimim, that person must take off Trumas and Maisrus for them. This is Mishum Tikkun Ha'ilam. And the Gemara says, an abitropis is allowed to take off Trumas and Maisrus and even sell their behemoths and avadim if it's for the purpose of raising money to buy them food or to help them do mitzvahs, which have a set amount, for example, buying a pair of tefillin. But they can't just stam sell things for investment purposes or for pidgin shvuyim. An apitropos also cannot represent the Yusayimim in a din Torah for the good or for the bad of the Yusayimim. The Gemara says, for Yusayimim, you cannot appoint Nashim, Avadim, or Ketanim as apitroposin, but if a father appointed one of these three before his death, Bezdin does not remove them from being an apitropos. Rabbi Yossi said, I never called my wife just Ishti, but rather I called my wife Besi, because she was the foundation of my house. Visions, the Gemara says, which one sees in dreams, should not be used to paskin a halacha one way or the other. If someone pays money for something, the kinyan is not fully chal until there is a kinyan meshicha. However, for hektish, the kinyan is chal just by paying. Meshicha is not needed. Yusaimim are treated the same way as hektish, that only hashlama is needed, but meshicha is not needed. Reb Chani Loi Bar Idi says, this kula for hektish and yusaimim is only good when it works out to their benefit, not if it's bad for them. The Gemara says, normally, if you wanted to sell land of Yusayimim, you must publicize it so as to attract the best price possible. People hear about it, there would be bidding, and they would get the best possible price. But if we need the money to pay for the Yusayimim's food or taxes, you don't need this hachraza, since the quickness is for the good of the Yusayimim. And finally, the Gemara says, if the apitropos does a transaction which causes the Yusayimim to lose money, then we remove him from office. The Mishnah, background. From a sechta Baba Kama, we know that Adam Mu'ed La'ilam, a person is always responsible for his actions. However, if a person does damage which has no physical evidence, for example, if someone makes Truma Tame, so you can't really see that anything happened to it, is he responsible for this or not? And the Mishnah says, if someone makes something Tame, or mixes Truma and Chulin, so only a Kayan can eat it, because now it loses its value, Medamea, or if he makes it into Yayin Nesach, Menasech, if it's B'shaygeg, then he's Pater, since it's a hezek she'ena nikker. But if it was done b'mezid, then he's chayef. The Gemara. Menasech, when someone makes something yayanesech, according to Rav, is taking someone else's wine and using it for avodah zarah, so it's yayanesech. According to Shmuel, he mixes it with bad wine. And Shmuel doesn't hold like Rav, since we say, kam le b'dirav aminei. Since you're already mechuyev misa for pouring wine to avodah zarah, you're not chayef for the payment of hezek to the wine. Kam le b'dirav aminei says you only get the greater of the two punishments for the two averas that you did. Tatnun gimel. If a person is mazik someone else's property, in a hezek she'en a nikar, can't be recognized, he's chayev whether it's b'mezid or b'shaygi, because we say hezek she'en a nikar shmei hezek. This is a halacha min ha-Torah. But sometimes, when he does it b'shaygi, we pater him, because if we would make him chayev, he wouldn't tell anyone. And the owner would come to eat a mixture of truma and be over on an iser. So why don't we say b'mezid chayev? Our answer is to keep people from stam damaging other people's produce. The Gemara says the para aduma and the mechatas can only be used if they had never been used before. If someone did work with them and passel them, he's pater midine adam, but he's chayev bedine shamayim. The Gemara says if someone stole a coin and then the government invalidated it, or if one stole chametz and then it became over alava pesach, so even though he stole it, he can simply return it and say, Harei shalach lefanecha, and he's pater, since it's a hezek she'en a nikar. And if we hold hezek she'en a nikar, lo yishmei hezek, he's pater. If someone cooks something on Shabbos, according to Reb Meir, if it was b'shaygeg, he can eat it. If it was b'mezid, he must wait until after Shabbos before eating it. Reb Yehuda says, if it was done b'shaygeg, he can eat it, but only on Motzai Shabbos. If he did it b'mezid, he can never eat it. This is a knas. Only others can eat it. And finally, Reb Yochanan Sandler says, if it was done b'shaygeg, it can be eaten on Motzai Shabbos, but only by others, not by him. If it was done b'mezid, no one can ever eat it. When dealing with Avodah Zarah, we're even more machmer because of the severity of the Isser. According to Rameir, when we're dealing with Isserei Darabanan, we do make a Gzera of Shaygig Atu Mezid. But when we're involved with an Isser Daraisa, we do not make a Gzera of Shaygig Atu Mezid, like we see by Rameir, by Hamavashal B'Shabbos. Not Nundala. If a person eats Truma B'Shaygig, he pays an extra 1/5, and he repays the Kayan with Tvua, which becomes Truma at the moment he gives it to the Kayan. But if he gives the Kayan Chulin Tmeim, Midaraisa, this would be a valid payment, but Midrabanan it's no good, since the Kayan is stuck with the Truma Tmeya right now. And again, this according to Rameir is like a Shita that we don't say Kansei Shaygig Atu Mezid. If Dam became Tameh, and the Kayan continued to sprinkle it on the Mizbeach, if it was done B'Shaygig, it's Meratza, it's accepted, and they can eat the flesh of the animal. If it was done B'Mezid, then it's Loihurtza, and you can't eat the animal, Midrabanan, i.e. there's no Gzera of Shaygig Atu Mezid. If someone immerses a keli in a mikveh on Shabbos, which is Asr Midrabanan, since it looks like tikkun kli, because it sort of is tikkun kli, you're fixing it so it can be used. If it's b'shaygig, he can use the kli. But if it was done b'mezid, he can't use it at all. And we're not kansa him when it was done b'shaygig, since his intentions were good. He was doing a mitzvah of tefilas kelim. Normally, if an isser falls into a heter, as long as there's rav heter, it's mutter. Sometimes we say something is batal b'shishim. You need 60 of the mutter dika thing to be mevatal, the thing that's asr. Midrabanan, if it's a chashava item, we say afilu be'elef loibato. No matter how much there is there, the one little drop falls in, it asers the whole thing. Like we say with chametz bepesach, that afilu be'elef loibato. Additionally, a person cannot purposely make something batal or attempt to make something batal, since we say the halacha is ein mevatlin iser lechatchila. A person is not allowed to do something to be mevatlin lechatchila. The halacha of bittel only applies if something accidentally fell into something else, then we can say that it's batal b'shishim, if it's something that involves shishim, or if it's something that's batal b'raiv, then it's batal b'raiv. Case, for example, what we mean by ein mevatlin iser lechatchila, let's say Friday night, a person eats a fleishig meal, and after the meal he says, you know, I want to drink a cup of coffee, and I want a little bit of milk. I'm only going to put a drop of milk in. And the milk only constitutes, say, 1/200th of the cup of coffee. So technically, you should say it's batal b'shishim. Therefore, a person should be able to drink milchig after eating the Friday night meal. No, a person is not allowed to do that because we say ein mevatel nisser lechatchil. Next Mishnah. If kayanim were mefagel a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, pigel means while the kayan makes the shchita or the zrika, he says that he will eat it chutz lizmane or chutz lemekayme. This is called pigel. So if kayanim were mefagel a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, if it was done b'mezid, they're chayev, even though it's hezek shein anikar. If you hold hezek shein anikar shmei hezek, of course he's chayev. If we say loy shmei hezek, it's a tekanas chachamim to prevent kohanim from stam being mefagel karbanis. He's not allowed to do it. And the Gemara says, from Abaye, if it's b'yadeh for someone to make something tomei or tahar, then a person is believed. If it's not b'yadeh, then he's not believed. The Rosh adds that we'll only say eid echad neman b'surin, if it has a cheskes heter. Rava says, even if it's ein abiyadeh, he's believed. And finally, the Gemara mentions an incident where a sefer told Rav Avahu that when he processed the parchments of a sefer Torah that he wrote for somebody else, he did not have the proper kavana to do it lishma, and therefore the sefer Torah is pasul. Rav Avahu asked as to who has the sefer Torah at the present time, and when he heard that the sefer Torah is in the possession of the buyer, he ruled that the sefer is believed to pasul the sefer Torah. This is because by admitting that he wrote an invalid sefer Torah, he loses his entire payment, and it's highly unlikely that the sefer would lie about that. Therefore, he's believed. Daf Nun Hei, the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada said, if a deaf ketana was married off by her father, it's good, but she can be divorced with a get, even without her consent. A ketana who was married off by her parent to a kayin, which is a kedushin derabbanan, she can eat truma. Finally, an animal which was stolen, and no one knew that it was stolen, and it was brought on the Mizbeach, that animal is kosher. The Gemara. A katan who eats nevelis, you're not mechuyev to force them to stop eating it. The Gemara says if someone stole a beam and built a house with it, Beis Shammai holds you must destroy the house and give back the exact stolen beam, because the pasuk says, v'heshiv es hagzela. Beis Hillel says, you pay back the value of the beam, since otherwise it'll be too difficult to do tshuva. It's very hard to pull down a whole house. And the Chachamim were able to make this gezerah because we say Tekanas Chachamim is good because of Hefker Bezdin, Hefker. Ula says, whether we know the carbon was stolen or not, it's not mechaperis, since Yush Kedi Loikani. Yush by itself is not enough for it to be his. The Baal gave up. But he doesn't have to bring a second carbon, so the Kohanim won't get demotivated when they hear the carbon was chulin. As is brought here in Al-Adaf, the Mishnah says that if one stole an animal and brought it as a carbon chatas, it's a valid carbon and he receives the necessary atonement. The Gemara, according to the opinion we mentioned, states that although Minatira it's not actually a valid carbon because it does not halachically belong to the one who brought it, nevertheless, the Rabbanan saw fit to consider it valid because they didn't want Kohanim who offered it to become discouraged that he ate an invalid carbon. And Rashi asks on this, since Minatira he is obligated to bring another carbon chatas, inasmuch as a stolen carbon has no validity, Minatira, how can the Rabbanan decree that his carbon is valid and relieve him of the Torah obligation? How would the Rabbanan just come along and knock off something which is made a raisa? Rashi answers the question by citing the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Tzadik Amud Beis, which says Yesh Koyach V'Yad Chachamim Lakar Davar Min HaTorah B'Shev V'Al Tasa. The Gemara have the authority to override a Torah obligation in a passive manner, i.e., they can order someone not to fulfill a mitzvah. Thus, the Rabbanan are authorized to decree, for example, that the shofar should not be blown when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos. We know that shofar Min HaTorah is supposed to be blown any time Rosh Hashanah comes out. How did the Rabbanan come along and make gzera that you're not allowed to blow it if it comes out on Shabbos? Chachamim have the power to do that. Lakar davar min haTorah b'shev yaltasa. So too concludes Rashi. The Rabbanan have the authority to exempt the thief from sacrificing another carbon, albeit min haTorah he should be obligated to do so. The Rashi points out that Rashi's answer does not suffice for a case such as yodledes or mitzara, where they must bring a chatas as part of their purification process, allowing them to enter the Beis Hamikdash grounds to eat the karbanas. In such a case, argues the Rashba, the rabbinical validation of the stolen chatas would cause an active violation of the Torah, kum vaseh, as it will permit them to enter the Beis HaMikdash when min haTorah they should be prohibited until they bring another non-stolen chatas. The Rashba therefore suggests that the Rabbanan validated the karban by employing their authority of Hefker Bezdin Hefker to transfer legal ownership of the animal to the thief. Thus, once the animal halachically belongs to the thief, the karban is valid even min haTorah. And finally, the Gemara says if someone stole an animal, and he was tavach u'machar, then he pays dalad v'hei. But if first he was makdishit, then he only pays kefil, he only pays double, since you don't pay dalad v'hei to hektish. The Mishnah. At the time of Titus HaMelech, the time that he was king, and Jews were being killed, there were no sikrikun, there were no extortionists who used to force Jews to give up their land. Afterwards, there were sikrikun, there were extortionists. And we know, even if a person is forced to sell his land, as long as it was actually paid for, the sale is good. If, however, no money was paid, but the Jews were simply forced to leave the land, then the sale is no good. If a Jew bought it from a guy extortionist, from a sikrikun, the sale may not be valid, since it was never really sold for money. As time went on, however, and land was being dominated in Eretz Yisrael by the Goyim, so Chazal said Hefker based in Hefker, and it was mutter to purchase land from the sikrikun. But the buyer must also give 25% of the original value of the land that he bought to the original Jewish owner, since the guy will probably sell it at a discounted price, at a price that's really worth a lot less than he paid the Jew that he took it from originally, and therefore it's not right that the second Jew purchasing it now should get it at a low price at the expense of the first Jew who land was taken from by one of these sikrikun, by one of the extortionists. I think Gemara says, there were three gezeras made at the time of Milchemes Titus. One, if a guy doesn't kill a Jew when he has a chance to kill a Jew, they could kill him. Number two, anyone who kills a Jew will be paid for Zuzim. And number three, anyone who kills a Jew would be killed himself, i.e. eventually the Jews were protected by law. So at that time, the halacha of Sikrikun is different, since Jews didn't really give up their land fully, since they thought later they'll get it back. Here we now begin the sugya of Kamtza bar Kamtza. This is a famous sugya, which is one of the few areas in Shas, one of the few sugyas, which is mutter to learn on Tisha B'Av, since it deals with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and is very sad in terms of the background and the story. The Gemara says, fortunate is a person who always lives in fear, but who hardens his heart in the time of trouble. As we learn in the Pasuk in Mishlei, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid. If we see what came out of the simple story of Kamtza and bar Kamtza, we see why we must be very cautious of even the smallest avera. because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. We know from Masechtas Yuma that the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of the sins of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shfichas Damim. But the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. The story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa went like this. There was a person who loved Kamsa, and Bar Kamsa was this person's enemy. And this person made a suda and asked his servant to invite Kamsa. By mistake, the servant invited Bar Kamsa. When the Baal Bayis saw him, he told him to get out of the house. Continuing on Daf Nun Vav. So Bar Kamsa said, "Since I'm here already, let me at least eat, but I'll pay you for the food." So the man said, "No, absolutely not." Bar Kamsa said, "Let me stay and I'll pay for half of the total banquet, half of the whole suda." And he said, "No." So he said, "If you don't embarrass me by throwing me out, I'll pay for the entire banquet." And again he said, "No." He picked him up and threw him out, which was terribly embarrassing. Bar Kamsa then said, "Since the Rabbanan were sitting there and they didn't protest, they obviously must approve of what he did." The question that we must ask is, why didn't the Chachamim do anything? So we could answer, it could be that they didn't see the whole Maisa going on, maybe it was happening on the side of the room, or possibly because of all the Machloikasin going on in Yerushalayim at that time, they didn't have the ability to intervene. Bar Kamsa then said, he would go and slander them to the Roman authorities. So he said to the king, "The Jews have rebelled against you. Here's how you'll know they rebelled against you. Send them an animal for sacrifice and see if they'll sacrifice it." It's interesting to point out, lahalacha, we are allowed to bring a carbon donated by a guy. However, by the time the calf arrived, it had a blemish, so it was possibly disqualified. The Chachamim really wanted to bring it for the purpose of Shalom Malchus anyway, due to Pikuach Nefesh. But Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas said, "We can't accept it, since people will think that behemoths with mumin are kashulam mizbeach." So they wanted to kill Bar Kamsa, so he wouldn't slander to the government. So Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas said, "Don't kill him, because people will think we killed him for no good reason." Rabbi Yochanan summed up the situation by saying, "The anvisanusai of Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas, the humility, the tolerance of Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas, destroyed the Beis Hamikdash and caused that we should be sent into Golus." The Mefarshim questioned the use of the term humility. Where is in the story of Rabbi Zachariah's trait of humility apparent, and what bearing did his humility have on his misjudgment? The Vilna Gaon gives an explanation. He says that the accepted procedure for a Beis Din judging a capital case is to allow the less chashuva members of the Beis Din to speak first, maschilim min atzad. The reason being, if the greater members would state their opinion first, those who are smaller in stature would be unable to disagree. In our story, however, although Rabbi Zachariah was actually the greatest of the Beis Din, he spoke first because in his humility he considered himself to be the least qualified. As a result, the others who were of the opinion that Bar Kamsa should be killed were unable to state their opinion, as that would be disagreeing with the leader of the Beis Din. Thus, as a result of Rabbi Zachariah's misplaced humility, Bar Kamsa was not killed, in spite of the majority opinion which favored killing him, eventually leading to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara says Niran Kesar was sent to destroy Yerushalayim, and when he shot an arrow, it always turned back towards Yerushalayim, so he knew that he was destined to conquer it. Nachtimin ben Gurion was called Nachtimin because, as we learned in Masechtas Tainis, since the sun shined for him. Kalba Savua was called this because people who were hungry like dogs came out of his house satisfied. The Rabbanan wanted to surrender to the Romans to prevent bloodshed and keep Yerushalayim from being destroyed. But many Jews, Biryanim, blocked the entrance of Yerushalayim so people couldn't get out to surrender, i.e. they thought they could win the war versus the Romans, therefore they didn't want to surrender. These Biryanim also burnt all of the silos of food so people would be desperate to fight. From this, terrible famine began in Yerushalayim. Rav Tzadok, who foresaw the destruction of Yerushalayim, fasted for 40 years in order to attempt to be mechaper for Klal Yisrael, so the Beis HaMikdash would not be destroyed. There is a halacha that no one is allowed to be buried in Yerushalayim, but even these Biryanim, these extremists, allowed this halacha not to be violated. When they carried out the Aron of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was just pretending to be dead but was really alive, the Biryanim cooperated with his Talmidim. Rabbi Yochanan, who then got out, attempted to appease the future emperor to have Rachmanis on the Jews. And in the end, this man did become the emperor shortly thereafter. The emperor was so impressed with the prophecy, he asked Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and told him he can make a wish and ask for something. So Rabbi Yochanan, sensing the Jews were in grave danger, wanted to receive something that would at least preserve the Jews spiritually. So he said the famous words, "Tein li Yavna v'chachameha." Since he knew Yerushalayim was destined to be destroyed, he asked him to spare the city of Yavna and the Torah that was in it. Also, save the family of Rabbi Gamliel ben Asi and give doctors to heal Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Yosef said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu soured the Chachma of the Chachamim, since Rabbi Yochanan should have asked the king to spare all of Klal Yisrael.